This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Welcome to the In Focus podcast. My name is Jayant Sriram and I'm your host for today. On this news update podcast, we discuss various aspects of the coronavirus crisis that the country is still very much in the grip of. But we focus particularly on the quality of data that the government is using as it plans its way forward. The big question on everyone's minds now is when this deadly second wave will peak and when cases will see a downturn. But even as we anticipate that soon, there are already projections for a third wave later in the year. Our ability to navigate that depends very much on vaccinations, which are still progressing at an alarmingly slow pace. I'm joined on the podcast today by The Hindu's Deputy Science Editor, Jacob Koshi. So Jacob, thank you once again for joining us on the podcast. There are many pieces of news floating around, many aspects to the coronavirus crisis these days, and these update episodes are a good way for us to kind of piece together some of these strands. So let's just start with the most immediate thing that comes to my mind, at least, which is that we had a news report yesterday that the principal scientific advisor to the government warned that even though we're in the midst of a horrific second wave right now, he said that a third wave is inevitable. Yeah. And he also said some things about projections around the second wave and whether this could have been predicted or not, which we'll get to in a bit.
Sure.
But let's just start with the first aspect of that. What did he say about the third wave? What are we expecting?
So there's the briefings at the health ministry that is held now. It is fairly regularized again, and there are nearly three briefings a week, which was what it used to be, you know, same time last year. So this time we had the principal scientific advisor to the government, that is Dr. K. Vijayaraghavan. He said that, you know, given the high levels of circulating virus that is there, we know that now it is primarily air to airborne transmission. He said, given those high levels, it was inevitable that a third wave, you know, would happen, so to say. Now, he didn't say third wave at the level of a country, but we can probably assume that. Or would it be restricted to certain states? The import of a third wave really is that because our levels of virus are so high, people need to be prepared for it. And the only way to be prepared for it is to have a large number of people vaccinated, such that, you know, all those who are vaccinated not actually be severely ill from it. So the implication of his statement is that if vaccination is too slow or a large proportion is not vaccinated, then we probably could see a repeat of the situation that of the second wave. And we are still really not out of the second wave yet. So it's actually a warning and an emphasis on the necessity for all parties, government, people, states, private facilities, all to come together and just be rigidly focused on immediate vaccination.
Right. And so the second part of that, he did also make some observations about how it was impossible to predict the ferocity of this second wave.
Yeah.
So you've written a bit recently on the models that the government has been using to predict these waves. Last week, there was also that big story that Reuters reported about how a scientific panel had warned the government about the worsening situation.
Yeah.
So, you know, what is the quality of data that, you know, the Indian government is using to kind of make its plans and projections?
Okay, so the second wave, it is now widely acknowledged, is that it caught everybody unawares. Now, the premise of saying that, you know, a new wave could be far more serious was the emergence of variants. In fact, Vijayaraghavan actually said that the new variant, in the briefing yesterday, he said the new variants now affected people were fitter. By fitter, he means in a biological evolutionary sense. That is, you know, those viruses are more hardy. And he also said that they had adopted a hit and run lifestyle. So these variants, now because of this, there were actually variants that were very specific to India. So there was actually a so-called double mutant variant that everybody has been talking about for, you know, a month now. And it basically has two mutations that independently have been known to increase infectivity as well as thwart the antibody response. In the last 3-4 months also, there is the Indian SARS-CoV-2 Genome Consortium. It's a group of 10 labs that have expertise as well as the machines to sequence the genome of the coronavirus. And they have, these groups meet every alternate day, at least for the past 2 or 3 months, where they actually share among themselves, you know, what variants or mutations are actually, you know, being detected from the samples of coronavirus positive states and hospitals and states provide to them. Their mandate is to fraction at least a sequence of, you know, positive samples and see if there are any interesting mutations and changes. So these guys keep looking at this, alert the scientific community within India. They also post this information on international databases called GISAID, so that the world can also understand which mutations are gaining ground in different geographies and countries. So they have been warning about this. Now, the protocol is that this INSACOG basically just informs the National Centers for Disease Control. It's a kind of a nodal body, an arm of the health ministry. And it is natural that from the health ministry, this information goes on to the highest levels of government. Some scientists have been saying that it's been in March, we had pointed out that certain variants would actually gain a lot of ground and, you know, could be threatening. But what we now know is that there really wasn't any indication that this would be an exceptionally ferocious attack, so to say. And remember, this is the time when Kumbh Mela, elections, everything was going on and general crowding. So it is actually kind of hard to keep track of which was the seeding wave or seeding event that actually triggered all of this. But the net sum is that, you know, there were warnings that it is known that new variants pose a damage to India, especially when India had gone really, really slow on vaccinating.
Right. So, but Jacob, even last year, we had some modeling, which, you know, by September indicated that cases would nearly go down or disappear by February, and even indicated that there wouldn't be the second wave. So, I mean, is there a kind of a modeling system that's being used here that's flawed?
Okay. So there have been many, many models and different kinds of approaches to try to forecast when cases will increase, when will it hit a peak, and when will it decline. Now, one model that was very interesting was something called the Sutra model. I mean, Sutra just basically stands for, you know, the technical definition of people who are susceptible, people who are asymptomatic, people who have been treated, people who have been recovered. So that's what the acronym Sutra comes from. Now, this model was interesting because it did not really have a lot of epidemiologists, you know, in their panel. It was a purely kind of data-centric mathematical approach. And why it had a lot of credibility was two reasons. One, the brains behind it was an IIT professor called Manindra Agrawal, who's a computer science professor at IIT Kanpur. And one of India's most famous mathematicians. He is global renowned in his field. That, and it was actually backed by the Department of Science and Technology. They got these experts together and they actually developed this model. Now, the interesting thing about this model was that last year, you know, in around October, and if you remember that in September, the cases had started to decline. They had said that, you know, if this trajectory continues, India is going to completely extinguish out its coronavirus curve by February. There will be no more cases. Now, it did look like that for a long time, all of winter. But by February, it was, you know, it had really declined and it was pretty much in the kind of numbers that they were talking about. But even in March, when there was a slight pickup, this Dr. Agrawal and the Sutra modelers basically said that, you know, there would be no real second wave. And they said it about a couple of times. It was only around April that then they started acknowledging that there would be a proper wave. And in that too, they have been trying to predict peaks. They have always said that, you know, the peak would come in middle April or end April. And now the latest is that, you know, this week in May is going to be the peak, so to say. Now, I've had conversations with Dr. Agrawal and other experts into modeling. And one of the problems is this model's assumption of not really considering the nature of the virus very closely. The other thing with this model is that, you know, it rests on a particular kind of linear equation. And there are certain values that keep changing. And those values, you need to observe the number of reported cases for a certain number of time. And based on those cases, you observe, you know, you get these values that you plug into an equation and it throws out a number as to, you know, what could be a peak. And now the problem with these numbers, it never tells you when there is going to be something called a phase change. That is, you know, when a declining curve suddenly becomes an increasing one, or an increasing curve suddenly declines. In one way, you know, this model was very good at telling you what happened in the past. It could explain patterns in the past, kind of could be captured in a model, but it had no way of telling you when there is going to be a turn in events. He later on did admit that, you know, there are other factors, like, for instance, newer variants and, you know, some variants being more infectious. These factors would tend to, you know, could obstruct the working of the model. He did admit to things like that. But be that as may, other experts have said that, you know, we should never, given the nature of this pandemic, we shouldn't be relying on just one model, and we should probably use something called an ensemble approach, which in, you know, in the modeling language, it basically means that, you know, you run mathematical models that capture different scenarios, and, you know, you kind of take a range of values, or, you know, a range of possible peaks that can be in. So, I mean, most modelers seem to be under the consensus that this week or mid-May would probably see the peak of this coronavirus wave, but we never know. And another confounding factor is that the test positivity rates are so high that there is now a real concern that, you know, the true numbers are again being hidden, because not many people are actually going forward for tests, because now the numbers seem to be stabilizing around 3,60,70. Now, is that a true estimate? Are people not testing enough? Positivity rate does, you know, at 25% plus, does seem to suggest that, you know, we're probably missing out a lot of infections, because an ideal positivity rate, according to WHO, is about 5 to 10%, and we kind of seem to be far from that.
Yeah, we'll get to talking about the peak, because we'll end this episode by looking at when things might sort of turn around, maybe take a turn for the better. But, you know, in the last episode we did, we kind of asked the question, you know, when vaccines became available for all adults to take, would there be enough supply? A week in from that process starting, we clearly have an answer. There does not seem to be enough supply.
Sure.
And the vaccine sort of, the curve, if you look at it, the figures for the number of daily vaccinations has taken a dip. So, you know, what's the status on that? How far away are we from actually having the situation stabilize?
So now, as you pointed out, the curve, the daily vaccinations is really going down. And this is exactly after, you know, vaccinations has been opened up to all adults. So there are a lot more of the 18 to 44 age group that are getting their first shots at private health facilities by paying 900 or, you know, 600 varying prices, you know, for a single shot. So while that is happening, but on the other hand, there are also instances of, you know, people actually turning up for their second shots, you know, but not actually getting them and being told to choose a later date. Now, this is inevitable, as we've also discussed in the previous episodes. Till about July, you know, when both Serum as well as Bharat Biotech are sufficiently able to expand their manufacturing capacity at least to five or six times than what is being supplied now, we are still going to continue seeing the scarcity. There is a slight hope that, you know, the Sputnik V, I mean, some 100,000 or doses have already reached Hyderabad, and it has already been cleared. There is some hope that if more supplies of this vaccine are imported, it could kind of help out, but that would again be a very temporary solution. But till June or July, we are still going to see fairly major scarcity.
Yeah, I think July is also what was indicated by Adar Poonawalla, the CEO of the Serum Institute, who I think, by the way, we might have to do a separate podcast on
in some other
episode, because, you know, he's been in the news lately. But we'll sort of leave that be for now, that whole situation. So just as I said, just to end this, are we seeing that there's also the oxygen situation that's happening side by side that continues to be of critical importance? But are we seeing a kind of turnaround with that in terms of the situation getting better? And then, you know, finally, where do we see this now in terms of the larger trajectory of this kind of hit, this wave kind of hitting a peak and then scaling down a bit?
So in terms of the oxygen supply, it is still not entirely solved, because the Supreme Court and the center has told the center to improve supplies. The center has, you know, is rationing out oxygen supplies to various states, and Delhi still says that, you know, it needs around 700 tons, and whereas you know, it is only getting 450. So there is a big deficit. Whereas on the other hand, the center says, points out to Maharashtra and says that, you know, even at its peak, you know, Maharashtra managed well with 275 tons. So there is clearly some element of wastage according to the center. And it is actually optimal management here that's at fault. Now, given the crisis situation, we are, the truth could somewhere be in the middle. Probably, I mean, a basic principle of all hospitaling everywhere is triaging. That is, hospitals must take a call on which patients need more attention and who don't need as much attention. From the perspective of the patients, it always looks cruel because everybody wants, you know, their person to get maximum possible attention. But doctors have a different, they are looking at a greater good, so to say, and their aim is to save as many lives as possible. So this disjunction will continue as long as the number of new patients who have been diagnosed with the disease keep flocking to hospitals. And as of now, that letup does not seem to have really eased. On the other hand, just a week ago or till a few days ago, as you and I are observing social media, and there seems to be a slight decline in the number of requests for help, both in for oxygen concentrators or cylinders, as well as drugs such as remdesivir. Now, this is probably just a proxy. Social media is not always the most ideal barometer, but I believe if there is a substantial decline for some time, we probably should see it reflected in the numbers too. I mean, in the test positivity, probably the oxygen crisis probably might shift geographies from Delhi to becoming more pronounced in other places. So from a national perspective, we are still, you know, pretty much in a crisis, and you know, we will have to go through this for at least for a few weeks. As Vijay Raghavan probably pointed out, you know, the second wave is still on and a third wave is inevitable, which basically means that there is going to be a trough, you know, between these two waves. Now, the trough will certainly come, but we don't know when it's going to come. It will happen because India is not unique from other countries where waves have lasted longer. But on the other hand, many other countries have expanded double shots of vaccines to a large fraction of their populations. We haven't been able to do so. So our trajectory, our experience with the second wave is going to be, probably a bit different than many other countries. But yes, the consensus seems to be that somewhere between mid-May or, a week after could pretty much be see the peak of the second wave.
Right. Jacob, we'll end this there. And of course, I think we'll reconvene next week again to discuss updates again. Sure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jan.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.